Now, more of The Drive with Steve Jackson on Sonoma County's News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
Welcome back to The Drive. This is Pete Fopiano, substituting for Steve Jackson. For those of you who are driving, who are commuting home, I hope your commute is a safe one and a swift one. That's not always the case in Sonoma County, is the swift part. Anyway, we're talking right now with Maddie Hirschfield, the political director of the North Bay Labor Council, and we are talking about not just labor issues, but the greater picture. And one of the bigger pictures, of course, that I'm sure many people are wondering is, what has last week's election meant, or what do we think it's going to mean? What are some of the things that we might expect in the next few years based on, you got a Donald Trump, who obviously is not in unilateral control, but we got a Republican-dominated Congress. What do we think what are we going to see here?
Yeah, I'm a little scared about what we're going to see, to be honest. I'm hearing wait and let's see what he does, but we're already seeing what he's doing. He's appointing people that are completely one-sided. Steve Bannon, in my opinion, has no place in the White House.
Now, Steve Bannon, for the benefit of our listeners, is
the Breitbart. He was running Breitbart before he left that, in August, to join the Trump campaign.
And Breitbart is a very very
very white supremacist
conservative website.
Yeah, okay. So some of these statements are not directly attributable to him, but he stands for this publication that has said some horrible things. They want to make us more white. He was apparently, according to his ex-wife, reluctant to send his children to a school where there were a high percentage of Jewish kids. He said that the thing about birth control makes women fat and unattractive. Educated women are mostly a bunch of dykes. I mean, this is the kind of thing that this guy has been known to purport, and he is the chief strategist of our new president-elect.
So you would be hard-pressed to classify this gentleman as a progressive.
I would be hard-pressed, yes, indeed. Yeah. But it's not just that he's not a progressive. He's completely...
kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum from whatever you might want to describe.
Yeah. And looking at... I'm spacing on the man's name now, but the guy he brought in to help with the transition from Ohio. He's part of the Christian Family Foundation. Mm-hmm. These are really extreme right-wing people. If he's surrounding himself with people like that, there's good reason for concern.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we've seen the Republican Party over the last 30 years, I think, and in degrees, move more and more and more to the right. Now, interestingly enough, Donald Trump has a very, I don't want to say checkered history, but it's a very fluid history. I mean, he has advocated on behalf of Democrats in the past as well as Republicans. And that's why he was so hard to pin down as far as what is he going to do? What does he really stand for? Of course, the Republican Party, virtually every candidate on the stage, and there were 16 that started with. I mean, it was an article of faith that you were going to defund Planned Parenthood, you were going to get rid of Obamacare, you were going to appoint conservative pro-life judges to the Supreme Court and various other things. And that seems to be, it holds out the old Nixon adage that says, hey, in the primaries, if you're a conservative, you run to the right. If you're liberal, you run to the left. And in the general election, you move more toward the center.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a campaign strategy. Maybe it wasn't. But it sounds like it wasn't.
It's very difficult to look at this in terms of history and past elections and what other candidates have done, because this election cycle has been very, very different than anything we've ever seen. So it's near impossible to compare it to that. But what concerns me are several things, aside from what I've already mentioned with the people he's surrounding himself with, is that this man has never served in public office. I mean, he hasn't even so much as sat on a school board, and he's now the president of the United States. We've seen the kind of temper he has. He'll stay up all night arguing with somebody on Twitter, retweeting horrible things that he said he didn't write, but he's retweeting them, so he owns them, or he has to own them. And this is the guy who has the nuclear code, or will have the nuclear codes. It's frightening to me. It's very frightening to me. It's frightening to me from that standpoint. I worry about how he's going to negotiate. There has been some proof of his contact with Russia as a candidate. What does that say? I don't blame anybody for not feeling safe.
I think there's a tremendous degree of uncertainty among the people who support him, and there is no question, absolutely no question to me, is that a couple of things. One is the mood of the country was something that he tapped into and sensed, yeah. and I don't played to, I guess, is the best word I can think of, but he did that uncannily, mm-hmm. and a lot of people, including, of course, Hillary Clinton's campaign, failed to grasp that. They failed to grasp the mood of the electorate sufficiently, and they certainly failed to address it. And I think part of the reason the main reason that Trump got the number of votes that he did is that he tapped in, he had a sense of what buttons to push, what were people really concerned about, and he addressed those. Now, whether you agree with him or not, whether you're a Trump voter or a Hillary Clinton voter, it doesn't matter. I think you have to agree is that he did an excellent job of finding those buttons and pushing them.
Yeah, he did. But that said, he made a lot of promises in pushing those buttons. And I don't think he's going to be able to produce what he promised. You know, that jobs and that we're going to win, we're going to always win, you're going to get tired of winning. He's not going to be able to bring coal jobs back. And that's what he promised. So he tapped into that, yes, but he tapped into it with empty promises.
And that's one of the interesting things that we're going to be looking at in the next few years, because there's a bit of a conundrum here, is that yes, there's no question that there's people who still feel left out, and there's people that have been left out of the economic recovery. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see it every day, you see it every day, and it doesn't take, you know, more than a little conversation with your neighbors to figure out that the recovery has not been universal. And so you people are frustrated. They're fearful, they feel left out. So you have an expectation among the people who voted for you that you are going to address these. You're going to change these. You're going to make things different. You're going to reverse certain things, and you're going to improve certain things. And if you don't, what happens 4 years from now?
Well,
where do those voters go? They could turn on you.
I'm convinced it's not even going to be 4 years. I have this feeling that he's not going to last for 4 years. I went to a talk the other night by Dave McEwen, the political science professor at Sonoma State, mm-hmm. and he said that as well. I don't think this job is going to be what Trump thought it was going to be, and I don't think he's going to enjoy it. I don't know how it would end in less than 4 years, but I don't see him making it 4 years. But just to reverse back to the local, mm-hmm. We saw a similar, in some ways, phenomenon in the 5th District. In the no experience that, you know, that this never even sat on a school board, but here she is at the highest office in the county. And it's interesting how that phenomenon happens. And I think what we learned there is that much as we may not like it, negative campaigning works. That was a very nasty campaign. Linda Hopkins' campaign had a lot more money, if you count the IEs, the independent expenditures, excuse me, that than the Evans campaign had. And they hit Noreen with everything that you can imagine, stuff that was twisted and not true. But there was no way to fight back because the money wasn't there on the other side. There was one piece that they did that fought back, but it was buried in all the negative that was filling the 5th District mailboxes. And here's the candidate saying, you know, gee, can't we all get along? We need to have a positive campaign. Everybody needs to be respectful. And yet she was also benefiting from the negativity that was filling the Press Democrat in people's mailboxes on the campaign.
Well, and I think that we can go back to the national level, too, is that was probably one of the nastiest, if not the nastiest presidential campaign I can recall. I mean, there's been others that have come close. But the problem with that, and now both candidates, you know, Hillary Clinton said, you know, we're all going to come together and give them a chance. And Donald Trump made what I thought was actually a well-crafted speech, essentially saying the same thing. But having gone through that negativity for so long, we're seeing the atmosphere that that's created. And you know, you've got demonstrations in high schools. You're seeing an increase in racial slurs and prejudice. You've essentially been living with that so long, it's almost like, well, we've become accustomed to it. And despite the calls for unity, how easy is it going to be, or how hard is it going to be, to actually achieve the unity that everybody says they want? So we're talking with Maddie Hirschfield of the North Bay Labor Council, and we're going to take a bit of a break. We're going to find out what's happening out in the outside world. This is Pete Fopiano on The Drive here on KSRO 1350 AM. Stick around. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Here's a Drive traffic update with Michael Green in the KSRO Traffic Center.
And no complaints over here, no big problems in the mix on the 101 corridor, just slow traffic. Now, still dealing with an overturn, by the way, over on Highway 1 over by Bodega Bay and the cross of Bay Hill Road. A lot of activity going on there, but our freeway slowdowns, no real surprise. Now that we're getting dark so early, that can complicate the slowdowns a little bit, but we're seeing River down to Corby for southbounders, and northbound approaching Todd is locked up slow to Baker. Steel Lane exit is clear from North 101 after an earlier stall. The narrows have intensified from Atherton to just beyond Washington. And Mothers Against Drunk Driving supports victims of drunk driving, drugged driving, and underage drinking at no charge. Call their 24-hour victim helpline, 877-MAD-HELP, or visit mad.org. That's MADD.ORG. And that's your Drive traffic. I'm Michael Green in the KSRO Traffic Center.
Golden State Warriors play-by-play is sponsored in part by Hansel BMW on 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO.
Hey guys, on today's SoCo Sun Show, we're talking with Liz about their new life room. So what do you like most about this life room, Liz?
We're outside more. The life room is a great place to hang out with our friends. At night, we can have the shades down if we need to block the wind. It's the best of both worlds. It's an extra room outdoors.
Tell our listeners about the party.
Oh, my daughter had her 16th birthday party recently. We had a bunch of her friends over. We had the mood lighting, a movie on a big screen, and it was fun for them. They had their own room.
And David, Sonoma County Sunrooms can add a life room to just about any home?
Sure. With a little creativity, the life room will blend right in. Give us a call to set up a complimentary design consultation to see what can work for you.
Right now, Sonoma County Sunrooms on Santa Rosa Avenue is offering up to $1,500 off. SoCoSun.com. Design, installations, remodeling.
At Discover, we believe anniversaries should be a time of celebration, not obligation. That's why we think annual fees are ridiculous. And now, just for giving us a try, we're going to give new card members a one-year anniversary gift they'll never forget. At the end of your first year, we'll match all the cash back you've earned dollar for dollar. No caps and no catches, because we know if you try us, you'll like us. And that's worth every penny. Try it and believe it at discover.com/match. Cashback match offer only for new card members. Limitations apply.
At Twinings of London, we have black, green, and herbal teas that are perfect for any mood. There's jasmine green if you're feeling rushed. Lemon and ginger if you're worn down. Or berry fusion if you're feeling wild. No matter what flavor you pick, it's crafted with 300 years of expertise for the perfect balance of taste, flavor, and aroma. You have to like the sound of that. Twinings of London. Teas that fit your every mood. Find your new favorite at Amazon.
Looking for the best deals in Sonoma County is just a click away at mysonomadeals.com. You can get great deals on dining, entertainment, family fun, and more. Right now, get 20 Ultimate Car Washes from Splash Express for only $125, normally a $259 value. Savings like this and many others are only at mysonomadeals.com. But hurry, because each deal is for a limited time only. That's mysonomadeals.com.
Winter is coming. Snow is headed for Tahoe this week. And the new Warren Miller ski movie is playing for one night only at the 3rd Street Cinema in Santa Rosa this Saturday night. Showtimes are 7 and 9:15. Warren Miller pre-parties start at 5 p.m. at BB's Burger Bar and 3rd Street Ale Works. Seating is limited. Tickets on sale now at warrenmiller.com. Every ticket holder gets a Squaw Valley 2-for-1 coupon. Get your tickets now at warrenmiller.com.
Now at participating Big O Tires, buy three tires and get the fourth free on select in-stock sets of four installed tires. The buy three, get one free tire sale ends November 28th. Visit BigOTires.com for offer details and locations.
Riding home with Steve Jackson on The Drive on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO.
Welcome back to The Drive. This is Pete Fopiano. We're getting into the final minutes of the show. It's amazing how fast it comes up, but we've been having a great time, and I hope you are too, those of you who are listening. And again, I want to encourage those of you who are listening, if you have a question or a thought that you want to share, give us a call. 707-636-1350 is the studio line. Or if you don't call, we assume you agree with everything we said and you're very happy with it, and I'll take that with me. Anyway, we're talking with Maddie Hirschfield from the North Bay Labor Council, and we've been talking about the effect and some of the reasons why the national election turned out the way it did, and what effect that might have on those of us locally.
We talked a little bit just before we went off that last segment about negative campaigning, and you're right. There's so much of it out there. The Hillary Clinton stuff that she used was merely Trump being Trump. I mean, there was very little embellishment there. It was just, you know, who he was, making fun of disabled people, insulting women. There was a lot of material there. Turnout, though, has a tremendous effect on the election. There was a lot of disenfranchised people who just stayed home. Mm-hmm. Right now, the turnout in Sonoma County is at 62%. That will go up as they count the uncounted voters. But 62% in a presidential election year is crazy. And we have very, very proudly, we have very high voter turnout in Sonoma County.
Sonoma County tends to vote in somewhat higher numbers than the state as a whole. And right. one day we were on here discussing with Bill Rousseau, the Sonoma County Registrar of Voters, and he was anticipating an 85, possibly as high as a 90% voter turnout.
Right. It will go up, but And I've heard it should go up into the 80s. I suspect it's only going to go into the 70s. But again, for a presidential election, I that's nothing. I think we're at 54.2% statewide. That's terrible. When you think about that, and we're only talking about registered voters. That's mm-hmm. a percentage of registered voters. Add in all those people who aren't registered to vote.
Who should be.
And who should be mm-hmm. and are eligible to be. And we've got a very small fraction of the people who are making these decisions. And my last point on that is that that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by, it's looking like, about 2 million votes. We're at 1.7 right now. So that's more than Gore had over Bush at 500,000. Mm-hmm. And with turnout, Trump now has less votes than Romney had in 2012, and Romney lost. So when you look at that, there's all that can be said about the Electoral College. I understand the Electoral College. I do know what's there. And yet, 2 million voters, 2 million American voters voted for Hillary Clinton, and we have President-elect Donald Trump.
And that is, we'll talk more about the Electoral College later on in the show. But that's correct. And that is one of the things that really mystifies some people is, first of all, what is the Electoral College? How does it work? Does it even exist as an entity except in name only? And you know, the answer is really it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But that is, of course, the deciding factor. And it is surprising to me personally that twice in my lifetime, twice in the last 16 years, we've had a candidate who lost the popular vote win the Electoral College and therefore become president. And that has only happened five times in the history of the United States. Twice in the last 16 years.
Right.
Kind of an interesting statistic to ponder. One of the things that you touched on is it's not just the numbers of people that were registered to vote. And both campaigns were really bragging about how many people they registered to vote. That's not the deciding factor. It's how many of those people who are registered to vote actually turn out, and how many people who aren't registered to vote should be turning out. And that was one of the big wild cards that was really virtually impossible to predict. that broke in Trump's favor and harmed Hillary Clinton.
So
a lot of the anticipation of the pollsters and the campaign were that the numbers they were anticipating, the numbers they were expecting, just did not get out to the polls, and the numbers that were necessary in order to have her
right. Not only the numbers, and I think part of the, you know, everybody's saying, "Well, how can the polls be so wrong?" Because they weren't polling the right people. There were people voting in this election that had never voted before. They were polling likely voters. So again, as I said earlier on, this has been such a non-traditional election. You just can't compare it.
Okay. I guess in everybody's life there has to be one of those Dewey defeats Truman moments.
Yeah.
And for, it was before my time too, but for those of you who are devotees of history like me, you'll know what I refer to. But anyway, we have Senator Mike McGuire on the phone, and we're gonna take a quick break from our conversation. We're going to talk to him about the passage of Prop 64 and what does that mean to us locally and what does it mean to the state. So, Senator McGuire, Mike, are you with us?
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Papiano?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. What's new? How you been doing?
I've been doing great. I've just, been on here trying to entertain the people and try to pass along a few interesting facts and have a great time doing it, at least, so.
I love it. And I know we're talking Prop 64, but quickly, I know there's a crunch here, but what's your initial take on this election from last week?
My initial take is that basically everybody underestimated the depth of feeling that the people who really felt that they have been left behind in the economic recovery and that their voice has not been heard or perhaps has never been heard, and they were making a statement. There were a lot of people who said, things are so screwed up in Washington or wherever you want to name. The only person who has a chance of doing anything is an outsider. And I'm not going to go with somebody who's an insider because I don't think that's going to affect anything.
Yeah, and I do hear that, and I think that there was a gap in particularly organizing in those states in the Midwest that have yet to recover from the steel industry collapse, coal going away, along with the auto industry. And just earlier this afternoon, Hillary Clinton is now up 1 million votes in the popular count, and it's expected to go to 2 million as 4 million are out. I mean, there's some real frustration on that side as well.
There is. Mike, we have Maddie Hirschfield here. You and Maddie have been, old friends for a long time here.
She's Maddie's amazing.
Senator McGuire, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Maddie. What's going on? Are you still drinking heavily after last Tuesday?
Yeah, I drink about as much as you do, but I've been crying a lot.
Exactly. I know. It's shocking.
Senator McGuire, I think it's 1.7 million that Hillary Clinton is ahead at this point.
You have new numbers, so that's great.
Supposed to go up to 2. Pete and I were just discussing that, how that works.
Yeah, that's an amazing margin. And still to lose the election. But, I guess we'll keep an eye on it. We'll, later on in the show, I'll talk a little bit about the Electoral College. But thank you for calling in. One of the reasons I wanted to have you call in is that let's talk about Prop 64 for a second. And then, of course, any other subjects that you want to toss in. But we'll start with that. That's one of the things that, probably no great surprise, perhaps, that it passed in California, but you came out against Prop 64, and you had some very specific reasons for that, if you could share those with us.
Absolutely, and again, both to Pete and to Maddie, thank you so much for letting me join the conversation. No surprise that Prop 64 passed. If you take a look at the number of Californians who are using cannabis at this time, we're in the tens of millions. And it's a multi-billion-dollar business for the state of California as well. And there are some very specific reasons. Number one, we are the number one marijuana-growing region in the country. Between 50 and 60% of all marijuana that is grown in America comes from four counties in our neck of the woods: Lake, Mendocino, Humboldt, and Trinity. And it's worth to our local economies over $1 billion alone. And the way 64 is structured, by blowing the lid off of limits on grows, particularly unlimited size of commercial groves, both indoor and outdoor, will greatly impact the small family farmers here on the North Coast. I have some real concern in regards to the tax allocation, and in particular the state of California controlling all tax dollars that are coming in. Yes, there is some original allocation earmarks, but long term, not one dime goes directly back to local cities and counties. And what we know is that once the state gets their teeth into a tax dollar, they don't let go of that grip. And what we've seen, particularly on the mitigation side, we need direct dollars flowing to cities and counties. And I think that there's going to be some cleanup on the way that allocation is currently advanced. And the biggest part of this is local control. So in the legislation that was passed last year, you have to get a license by the state to be able to operate. And there's 17 different licenses, everything from a dispensary license to a delivery license to a public health testing license to a growing license. The state can't issue their license until the local entity, a city or county, issues theirs. And if a city or county does not issue a license to operate, the state can't issue their license. Well, Prop 64 did away with that provision. So, yes, you may have to get a local license, but if you don't like that decision, and let's just say Santa Rosa denies a dispensary, that dispensary operator then can appeal to a to-be-determined state board that could then override local land use decisions. And I'm a big local control person, and I think that that ultimate authority should be by the elected representatives in the city or county, and Prop 64 does away with it. And I also think it's reality. We are better off with regulation, and particularly with the seed-to-sale mechanism that is now being put into place, where we will now track every plant, every pound that is grown, every ounce that is sold at three different levels. I think that will be good news for the state of California. And I'll end it here, and I don't mean to keep going on, but I also think it's going to be 10 years to be able to get out of the mess that we're in. And what I mean by that is, since Proposition 215 passed 20 years ago in 1996, the marijuana industry has grown to be worth probably about $10 billion in this state. And now you compare that with the rest of agriculture. The rest of agriculture is worth $42.5 billion, all ag products combined. Marijuana is most likely worth $10 billion. I say most likely is we don't have a way to track it. And over those 20 years, because it's been unregulated, we've seen incredible environmental damage, particularly on the North Coast. In 2014, the Eel River and the Mattole River ran dry because there are so many illegal water draws. Incredible violence. Thousands of acres have been clear cut. And we need regulation to rein in what we've seen, some of the bad practices and the criminal element. And there is definitely a criminal element in Humboldt County. There's a Bulgarian cartel that controls a lot of the flow out of Humboldt. The Hmong population in Trinity County controls a lot of the flow out. And we estimate at the state of California, it's going to take the first 5 years of 64. It'll take 5 years to migrate 40 to 60% of all growers, all operators, into the legal system. It will then take the remainder of the 5 years of the next decade to get those individuals that may, frankly, be criminals out of the business or complying with the new rules and regulations that are now in place in California. So that said, the majority of the growers on the North Coast, they just want to abide by the laws and pay their taxes. And I want to make sure that our region is not hurt by the Walmart of weed, if you will, when it comes to these large grows that may be going in the Central Valley.
I like that, the Walmart of weed. I'm going to use that if you don't mind me stealing it sometime in the future. You touched, we're running out of time, but there is one thing that you touched on, and that's the illegal diversion of water, like the Eel and Mattole Rivers or so. Isn't it possibly the case that even now that marijuana has become legal, we're still looking at a legal, intensive, very water-intensive use, and we're not really out of a drought yet?
Yes, and particularly, so the North Coast Regional Board has essentially written the new state law new state water law for the remainder of California. And we've also funded a team of about 24 professionals whose job it is to find those illegal diverters, turn off the spigot, and shut down the operation. Under 64, the good part of 64 is that environmental rehab will be funded, and environmental agencies will also be funded at the state for enforcement. And the state has to cover their costs when it comes to the enforcement and administration of marijuana. So with 64, there's two types of taxes. There's going to be a 15% excise tax at point of sale, and then $9.25 per ounce of bud, and $2.75 an ounce for leaves. And a portion of those dollars have to go to regulatory agencies. So, Pete, I actually think we are going to be much better off over the next 10 years when it comes to those illegal diversions, because they will all now be regulated and they have to be permitted. And if they're not, they'll be shut down. And in a lot of regions, if you can't identify the water that you are going to use, you're unable to operate now. So I think we're going to be much better off. Will there still be challenges? Absolutely. But I do think we're much better off with regs that are now being put into place than we were just a year ago.
I have to agree. I mean, I think a lot of the problems that we have seen are one of the reasons that people voted for Prop 64. They were expecting not only an influx of revenue, but they were hoping that by bringing it out of the shadows and decriminalizing it, a lot of the gang activity and the crime associated with it in the past would lessen, and also possibly some of the things that the impacts that you're talking about, like the illegal water diversions, which are virtually impossible to track because you can't measure it because you don't know where it is or even if it exists.
You're absolutely right, and I think the interesting part of all this, and I know we're going to be talking a lot about it over the next year, with a Trump administration, what will their stance be on cannabis? It's still a Schedule I felony, which is ridiculous. It's still considered the same as heroin and methamphetamine, and it's absolutely ludicrous that it is. But what will the Trump administration do for those states that have legalized recreational marijuana? I think we should get rid of the Schedule I felony. People should be able to use marijuana responsibly, just as they are supposed to drink responsibly. And it's going to be really interesting, the approach the administration takes, because the Department of Justice has, if states adopt these 7 rules that were sent out by the Department of Justice and U.S. Attorney's Office, there will not be federal intervention. Now, there will be for some of the most significant outliers. But that's been Obama's doctrine on marijuana, which is right. It could all be a 180 now under President-elect Trump.
And that's one of the big uncertainties that, one of many uncertainties under a Trump administration that was going to be a wait and see. Maddie, you had a quick question because we're running low on time.
Yeah, but not a question. Senator McGuire, just wanted to thank you for your service and your great service to the great state and to the northern part of the state in particular. And I wanted to thank you also for signing on to the joint statement by Pro Tem De Leon and Speaker Rendell.
Oh my gosh.
About the national election. That was it's an amazing statement. I'm hoping Pete's going to let me read it towards the end maybe. Thank you so much for standing behind that. It makes me very, very proud to be a Californian.
And I got to say, Maddie and Pete, you take a look at what California has done. We're number one in job growth. We have set aside $6.5 billion in reserves. We're finally reinvesting in our public schools. We have the highest consumer spending rate in the nation now. And we're champions on climate change because of the people of California demand it. And I would hope that if President Trump puts all the political partisanship aside, looks at the way California is being run, I hope that he takes some cues. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. But we got to defend our values here in California, and I think we're going to be unified on that. And I was just stunned and saddened on election night, right? I mean, the two of you, I did not, and probably ignorantly, did not think that we were going to see the result that we did.
I think, I don't know how many people, but it's certainly in the millions, were rather stunned by the results. And in retrospect, there'll be all kinds of, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but it certainly was a unique election, certainly in my lifetime, and probably, you know, it's within the last century. But we're running low on time. Senator McGuire, thank you for your service. Thank you for calling in. We really appreciate it. And we'll have you on again, but congratulations on all the good work, and thanks. We appreciate having you on.
Mr. Papiano, thank you so much. Ms. Hirschfeld, thank you. Always appreciate all of your hard work, and thank you for allowing me to be with you.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to find out what's happening in the real world in news, weather, and traffic. And then we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. This is Pete Fappiano on The Drive. Stick with us. It's almost 6 o'clock, but we got a lot more stuff to talk about.
Here's a Drive traffic update with Michael Green in the KSRO Traffic Center.
Okay, Southern Marin, North 101, you're jammed up there right off the Richardson Bay Bridge, and I would call that slow stretches up into Central San Rafael. Richmond-San Rafael Bridge is backed up just about to 101 on the 580 flyover from 101, and Sir Francis Drake is end-to-end slow all the way across from 101. More North 101 slow traffic heading down the hill before that 580 merge. It backs up there at Francisco. 37, maybe a little better, but just off the bridge and through the stoplights heavy. Look for extended slow traffic there out to Skaggs Island Road. And that's your drive traffic. I'm Michael Green in the KSRO Traffic Center.
Now, more of The Drive with Steve Jackson on Sonoma County's News Talk 1350 and the new FM 103.5 KSRO.
We are back on The Drive. Our final minutes. This is Pete Fappiano. Maddie Hirschfeld is with us, and we just finished talking to State Senator Mike McGuire. And one of the things that he mentioned was a statement by former Assembly Speaker Kevin DeLeon. And we want to take a few moments to read at least a portion of that. Maddie?
Yeah, I'll try to get to the important stuff. So this is a joint letter by the state legislature, California State Legislature, California State President Pro Tem Kevin DeLeon, and California Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon released the following statement on the presidential election. Today we woke up feeling like strangers in a foreign land because yesterday Americans expressed their views on a pluralistic and democratic society that are clearly inconsistent with the values of the people of California. We have never been more proud to be Californians. By a margin in the millions, Californians overwhelmingly rejected politics fueled by resentment, bigotry, and misogyny. The largest state of the union and the strongest driver of our nation's economy has shown it has the surest conscience as well. I'll go skip to the end. While Donald Trump may have won the presidency, he hasn't changed our values. America is greater than any one man or party. We will not be dragged back into the past. We will lead the resistance to any effort that would shred our social fabric or constitution. California was not part of this nation when its history began, but we are clearly now the keeper of its future. That's California.
Interesting statement, as we've said so many times, both on this show and what we've said to ourselves. California is kind of a world unto itself. We tend to go our own way for all the good and bad that may portend. One interesting epilogue of many interesting epilogues to last week's election is outgoing U.S. Senator Barbara Boxer, who, of course, is going to be replaced by former Attorney General Kamala Harris in the U.S. Senate, is introducing a bill to abolish the Electoral College. Trump won, of course, the Electoral College, where each state receives a specified number of votes based on their population. But as we discussed earlier, the popular vote will probably end up being in favor of Hillary Clinton by as much as 2 million votes. Now, interestingly enough, we talked about that in 2000, of course, between Bush versus Gore. The same thing happened, but Gore's margin of victory in the popular vote was much less. Interesting quote from Donald Trump himself back in 2012. He originally believed that Mitt Romney had won the popular vote, but lost the Electoral College to Barack Obama. Trump called the Electoral College a disaster. Last week, he called it a genius. We can certainly understand why he might have changed his opinion in that. But he also made an interesting comment. He would have campaigned differently, he said, if presidential elections were decided by the popular vote. He would have taken more time in populous states like New York and California. He says, of course, he still would have won, but it's interesting how he would have changed his strategy. Of course, yeah, Clinton would have changed her strategy, too, and any presidential campaign would have. Now, to abolish the Electoral College is going to require an amendment to the Constitution. If Congress passes it, and I have to say realistically, I think we can say that is a very, very big if at this moment in time. If the U.S. Congress passes it, three-quarters of the states would need to ratify it within 7 years. Now, we don't know the odds. I don't know what that's going to be. But if those of you who have, you know, somewhat long memories will remember back in the 70s, the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment for Women, failed to gather the three-quarters votes of the states and essentially just died without ever, you know, seeing the light of day. So I guess the thing that we can take away from all this is that, remember the old Chinese proverb, may you be cursed to live in interesting times. I think we can say without fear of contradiction, the understatement, that these are interesting times. Anyway, we're almost at the end of the show. I want to thank my guest, Maddie Hirschfield, who's still here with us, Senator McGuire for calling in, Jim Winston and George Adair, who came into the studio, and I want to thank all of those of you listeners who are tuning in, for Steve Jackson, for letting me substitute for him. I have had a great time the last 2 days hosting the show. I enjoyed it. I hope those of you who are listening enjoyed it as much as I did. And I look forward to being back again with you at some point, either as a guest or a host. Until then, take care. Have a happy holiday season. And remember, no much how we disagreed on an election, hey, we all still live together. We're family. We're friends. We're going to go on from here. Before we leave, a great songwriter and poet, Leonard Cohen, passed away, and I'd like to kind of end the show on that note as kind of a tribute to him. One of my favorite songs in the entire world, Leonard Cohen doing his version of Alleluia. I will leave you that as a final farewell good wish from me to you.
The secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. From your lips she drew the hallelujah, 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 for me. All I ever learned from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. But it's not a cry that you hear tonight. It's not some pilgrim who claims to have seen the light. No.
it's a cold and it's a very broken hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Traffic update with Michael Green in the KSRO Traffic Center.
A couple of new problems cropping up out there. It's a fender bender south 101 before River Road. Everybody's scooting to the shoulder, but it lengthened that slow traffic. South 101 out beyond Airport Boulevard and solid from there all the way down to Corby. Northbound will slow down before the golf course exit out towards the downtown exit, and then kind of extended sluggish up the line past College and Bicentennial and all the way out to the scene of this crash on the other side of the freeway. So there's your spectator value for North 101.